Okay, we started out, Nicole was so kind to give us that nice disclaimer notice. Yes, I am with a vendor organization. And so does that mean like you don't get continuing education credits or something if you listen to me? So if you fall asleep, you mean you don't get the credits or what happens with that?
Actually, we're getting negative credits right now.
Oh, it's a loss of credits? Wow, that's brutal. Well, this is fun, a vendor, and we're talking about free software. That seems like a bit of an oxymoron, doesn't it? I will say that you're not going to see anything commercial in this presentation. Most of the slides that you're going to look at were actually done by the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. And so if you hammer me on the clinical aspects of them, you'll absolutely beat me up because that's not where I'm coming from. I served as the program manager for this implementation over the last 2 years. And so really in my role, representing the software that BrowserSoft implemented. Covering the topic here, we're going to take two slices at this, if you will. First, I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the Kansas Department of Health and their actual project, the history of their project. And this project was funded by monies from CDC, so it's appropriate that I think we're here today talking about it, and some of the outcomes that have been realized so far. And then I'm going to finish up with an area that I'm a little bit more experienced in the actual OpenHRE toolkit and the implementation of that toolkit. And one more thing I would add to this is that the work here was really done, and I'm honored to get a chance to speak to this, by the folks at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. They put all the clinical work behind this. And they were working on this actually for several years before we came along to do some automation on it. And so we know about diabetes. I suspect everyone here has seen these statistics in one way or another many, many times. Huge problem for us. Huge problem in the state of Kansas. 65,000 Kansans don't know they're diabetic. That's a pretty big problem. Working on down the list, talking about children born in 2000, will face a 1 in 3 chance of developing diabetes. And the last number, that's actually a CDC number, that 1.5 billion, and perhaps you've heard that number. And so there's some opportunity here, certainly to play into the open source arena, if you will. So here's some rather ambitious goals. And when I first saw some of these numbers, I thought, you know, these guys are a little bit touched perhaps on this, but some great things have happened here. If we look at what's being accomplished here, the HbA1c tests, starting out with this idea that when the program started, looking at about 69% compliance there, touching up near 83%. And these are all actual numbers coming out of this program at this point with the given population we're talking about that are participating. These are not statewide numbers, if you will. So the project started actually back in 2002 in Wichita, about a 3-year pilot project working with a couple of clinics in that community. Several lessons learned, and they thought, you know, we could take this statewide. We could improve the health, and we could go out to a lot of these clinics that are active in diabetes and try to make a difference. And so the state implemented this in stages from about 2004 to 2006, and you'll see the teams. I'm going to display them here, the red team, the green team, et cetera. And they went out each year, and they took a handful of clinics, oh, something like about 25 or 30 clinics per year, and they bought a lot of them computers, which is a nice thing, right? You're out there in the physician, we buy you a computer. And they set it up, and they set them up with the CDEMS program. Oops, I went a little further than I want to. Talking about CDEMS, CDEMS is a program that's also an open source application. It's offered by the state of Washington. It's downloadable for free, and it's for chronic disease management. And so you can capture it within your clinic, all the information you want. In this case, they went after diabetes as the first target market. They approached the program using the chronic care model. And if you're familiar with this model, and I suspect we're here in public health, a lot of people are, a couple of really key components are the informed active patient in the process, and the proactive team that's involved in that patient's care. And these two have to come together for this to work. And I think, you know, the folks at the state of Kansas have really done an excellent job. And to accomplish that, first off, they set up these diabetes teams. So we had 3 color teams, the red team, the blue team, and I think the green team, if I've got my colors right this morning, brought them together and started regular team meetings. And through these team meetings, talked about how do you care for diabetic patients today, what information are you recording, what are you doing, what are your practices within your practice, and actually getting conference calls going every month and talking to each other. How does this work? What's working for you? What's not working for you? And then at the same time started the deployment of the CDEMS application. The project so far, 45 funded organizations on this, so those are the folks they bought some computers for, gave them some money for the data entry. 80 sites statewide, 350 plus participating professionals, and a very diverse collection of organizations, which I think really contributed to the project, all the way down to the Promotora program here at the end, which, anyone know what that is? that's a special program with a lot of the folks that are in Kansas, in our western Kansas, working with the meatpacking plants and things out there. So that's a pretty diverse group, I'd say. And so we talked about some colors. Let's bring in the first one. Sedgwick County is where Wichita is, so that was a pilot project. Then came our green team. I love this animation, by the way. Our red team. And lastly, the blue team. So what you saw there was really 2004, 2005, 2006, the participants coming in. Talked about CDEMPS. CDEMPS is one of those things you can download. If you Google CDEMPS, you'll find it out. The state of Washington, great folks. And so what did they do? And I want to clarify again, this is all pre-BrowserSoft involvement. This is what was going on. So how does it work? Well, first off, they enter the patient data into the CDEMPS system. So yes, that's duplicate entry. That's why there was some money out there for doing the data entry. Now, some organizations have since gone to interfaces. I know Sean touched briefly on interfaces. They're doing patient interfaces from their practice management system and also interfaces from their lab system to get some of this data in here. So they have sped up this process some, taking some of the effort out of it. And then a hard copy is printed out from the CDM system and it's stuck in the patient chart. Well, that's easy enough from a workflow perspective, I guess. And then the doctor updates the patient charts with every visit. And then lastly, they take a look at receiving the vaccination, what's in, you know, how are we doing? What's our process? Are we improving? And then the cycle repeats itself. And some of their targets here, we're really talking about the processes, the self-monitoring of the blood glucose, the diabetes education, nutrition. In order to get this done, you're coming all the way down, and they're tracking on all these within CDEMS. Right down to my favorite one is they're always talking about the foot checks. You know, did they get the patients to take their shoes off? And in fact, they've trained a lot of the clinicians that you don't have to wait for the doctor to take your shoes off anymore. The nurse makes sure that that happens before the doctor ever arrives. And so the doctor's going to come in and see you sitting there with your shoes off, and hey, there's a little prompt. Yeah, I'm going to look at those while I'm here, right? Some clinical results from this. Pretty impressive program. I'm not going to read all these for you. I'll just let you take a glance at them. Of course, what you have to look at is the red and the orange. Good stuff. So a very successful program. Even the foot checks. And so what does that translate into from a practice standpoint? New office protocols, like I was talking about, the shoes coming off before with the nurse being asked to do that. Diabetes patient newsletters going out, certificates for improved A1C tests, right down to patients being made full partners in their care process, which we know is critical to the success. And some of the office protocols, last one there, my favorite, shoes and socks removal. And then we do a lot of self-management work with goal sheets for the patients at each visit. And so these are being looked at, you know, by the physicians and by the patients coming in. And then all the requires patient providers are being required to use the CDEM system. It also translates into some community programs, some efforts that have been put out there. And of course, we can't do this single-handedly from a physician standpoint. Looking at organizations like even the YMCA, optometrists, dentists being involved in this process, and then community education programs. So on to CDEMS, a little bit more on this. Their process had been, okay, I'm out at the clinic, I'm tapping this data in about my patients, right? And that's not very fun, but it has to happen so far. That data would get exported to a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. And then once a quarter, they'd work the process, they'd send that to KDHE. And you know, the folks at KDHE just loved receiving from 80 different clinics all those Excel spreadsheets. And of course, you know what they did with it, right? That's right. And so it took them most of the next quarter to get out the last quarter's information. And as we know, this information becomes kind of meaningless as we cycle through the process. That's not my graphic. That is our epidemiologist for the state of Kansas. You can see how satisfied he is with the process. And so they approached us about OpenHRE as a method of data collection, really to improve their efficiency here. And to improve their accuracy, because of course, as we translate all this information, we lose a lot of accuracy in the process. What is OpenHRE? It's a flexible solution for constructing and scaling health information exchanges. We've used this in half a dozen communities around the country and fit this model very well. And it has a set of core services. And I know Sean touched on things like MPI, and it also has an MPI built into it and things like that. And really some opportunities to aggregate or present individual records. And so OpenHRE could be configured as a health record exchange, and I can pass community records, much like Indiana does, or in the state of Kansas, the Department of Health, I can actually pass aggregated data. And you can download it at sourceforge.net. It's out there. Then I want to drill in just for a few minutes. So what are we actually doing here from an OpenHRE perspective? Here is just a quick sketch of the initial deployment. This was the pilot, and there are 13 clinics involved in this pilot. And so twice a month, what happens is there's a software application that we've installed on each of the CDEMS machines that actually pushes a copy of the database to a centralized location. And this happens on a scheduled basis. If the machine's not on, of course, it doesn't go. So we try to remind these people that you need to leave the machine on so you can push the data to us. And in the process, it does something interesting. It de-identifies or actually removes the directly identifiable patient data before it's pushed out to the state. And so if your first question was about, oh, we can't do this, on and on and on, no, we actually are able to strip that out. And so then we take these databases, we co-locate them, and we've written something we call the CDEMS adapter, and its job is to grab that data and format it so that we can write it into a reporting database. And that reporting database is made available to the folks at KDHE in two forms. One form, and I'll show you some screenshots of this, is diabetes summary reports, some online tools. And the second form, and we all love open source, right? I was going to ask that question earlier. How many people have downloaded an open source application? Hands. Was that a little over half? Better than half? Let me see who hasn't. Do I dare ask you why not? No, I won't go there. You should be. You're missing an opportunity, I think, if you're not. So we went out like everyone else, and OpenHRE is really a collection of other open source tools, right? We didn't write that whole thing from scratch. That would take way too long. We went out and downloaded, in this case, Mondrian. If you've heard of Mondrian, great OLAP reporting tool, online analytical processing, that we then map to this reporting database, and so the epidemiologist can slice and dice this thing as many ways as you can think of, and it's actually very easy to use. Our technology folks showed it to me, and within about 5 minutes, I was up and running different reports on it. And so that's your reusability aspect of it here. And just some screenshots. I wasn't so bold as to try the live demonstration. I've been challenged on that a few times in the past. And you know, my response time's a lot better on PowerPoint. So what you're looking at here is, so who's out there in Kansas? You have some date ranges up above, starting dates, ending dates for running this. And the KDHE folks in their department have access to this. Here's the counties that are participating so far. Here's the clinics within those counties that participate. And then within those, you have the various sites. So in this case, I highlighted Douglas County in Kansas, which came up with two clinics within Douglas County, the Heartland Clinic there and the Internal Medicine Group. Both of those are in Lawrence, Kansas. And we know what Lawrence is famous for, right? Basketball. We did really well last year. I'm really proud of those guys. I had to plug that. So they make a selection here. Then they create an output report. So I now have three columns, demographics, visit information, test information, and all the various information coming from all those different source systems out there rolled up. And I will tell you that this isn't Douglas's report, even though I highlighted Douglas. I switched it around for this, so you're not looking at their information. You're looking at actually another group's information. And we have, I couldn't display all the columns on the screen here, but we have, of course, in demographics, patients, gender, age. You'll see the next screen, some ethnicity. We have visit information, collecting BMI, blood pressure, et cetera. And then we have some of the clinical data, the HbA1cs, and the results of the various clinics and their proficiencies at that, and right on down the page. And this was all good and well, but if you'll notice these clever little boxes here, and I was told I have to use a pointer to show them. You'll notice females here. In this case, I'm showing 159 females. Can you see that way back? Okay. So what I'm able to do with this is there's a nice little filtering tool on here. So if I just wanted to look at those females, if I come back to this, notice I now have 159 females, but I have no males. So everything on this has now been updated to reflect that change. I can make that change with any of the categories you see here. So if I wanted to only do ethnicity-wise, whites, blacks, American Indians, I can make those slices. I can make slices and dices just off this screen any way I wanted to. So we end up with two tools here. We have this idea of Mondrian, where someone like an epidemiologist can go in and slice and dice information. But this is made for the general user, that I can go in and just look at, you know, insulin rates, et cetera, any way I want to slice this. And we added one more piece to it, and that is, of course, you have to do a PDF report so we can print that and take it to the next meeting. And so same data printed out. And I do apologize, there's additional data down below that you'd show on this report, but can't squeeze all that in on a screenshot. And that's what I have for you this morning. Mike?
Well, three excellent presentations. And so you've seen now a full application development process that is to a NEDS compatible system targeted to replace the NETS system that's currently operating in Utah Department of Health. We've also seen some newborn screening algorithm development integrated with OpenMRS, as well as now a quality of care tracking tool that, as well as that supported an underlying public health initiative to really improve quality of care for diabetes patients in the state of Kansas, and how that has been improved significantly by interfacing with a open source chronic disease management system. So three different presentations giving us cuts and slices at some of the different opportunities and aspects that are out there to really put open source in action in public health. What I'd like to do now is to open it up generally. You've heard these three presentations, and to ask some questions of a specific presenter or of all three presenters. Gentlemen?
I'd like to ask all three presenters to describe their software status.
So the question is to describe their software status.
Stacks.
Okay. Mike, you want to kick us off?
Sure. So Trisano is built, the database is Postgres. We use Java. It will run on Linux, OS 10, or Windows. We use Ruby. So we run on the JVM, but the primary development language right now is a language called Ruby. And then we use multiple components within that. So it runs on Tomcat, makes use of, I don't know if you're familiar with Ruby, but the libraries are called gems, small little pieces of code. So that's our stack at this point.
So Java is the development language for what we built for the matching algorithm. OpenMRS is a MySQL Hibernate Spring Tomcat stack. We do have in one country is using actually Ruby on Rails. They've replaced the Tomcat with Ruby on Rails, so they still use the Spring API down to Hibernate into the database. So, but basically it's Java. And yeah, I'm going to ask a question to the audience here for people to think about. Do people think, what if people think about using Microsoft products for open source development? Think about that and maybe we can get back to it, but I'm curious to hear what people think about that.
I'm going to defer just a bit because I'm not the technologist, but if you go to SourceForge and take a look at OpenHRE, you will find a very detailed document describing our architecture. None of this is hidden. We spent actually quite a bit of time on that, so go ahead and look there if you like.
Other questions? Shy group, how unusual.
Can I make a comment to the
please
open source Microsoft question?
Yes, do you want to be able to respond?
I don't think we have a lot of choice sometimes as IT folks to choose if we get to do that or not. Sometimes that's mandated, and so I think we have to start going that direction and actually developing products with being technology agnostic and really start doing open source licenses with .NET or Java or Ruby or whatever the technology may be. Do I like it going that way? Probably not, but you have to be flexible.
I think it's a great idea because there are a lot of Microsoft developers out there and they have a really good support community. And with SQL Server Express and C Sharp Express being free, you can start building stuff now and just get it.
I was going to add one comment to that. When we were approached by the state of Kansas, it was very interesting because they were declared Microsoft shop. And they said, but talk to their CIO, and he looked at our demonstration. He said, well, this is a no-brainer. We'll do this, but you'll have to support it. We're not going to put that server in our rack. So another cut at it.
Sure, Mike.
Yeah, it's interesting. Microsoft, I didn't have them on our slide, but they're also one of our partners. They're interested also in open source, as long as, for the company I represent, we're most interested in it being cross-platform. So anything that we would build would need to run on anybody's technology.
Sean, do you want to make any more comments?
Sure. So I sort of wanted to ask that question because I think there's some controversy in the open source community around that. By asking it, I'm not trying to imply one way or the other. I use that question to sort of maybe push the concept up a little bit. I personally think the greatest value in open source is not necessarily in the code, it's in the community. Our OpenMRS, our linkage algorithm, have been made stronger by the people outside of the original founders coming in and telling us, that's crazy, that's wrong, this is better, and having those discussions, those dialogues, fighting well, seeking clarity, not necessarily agreement, but then coming to a conclusion. And I think that's the real power of open source, is truly getting that community in place and having the dialogue. So I think it's less about the software and more about the community, the people behind it.
Scott?
Our question for David in the Utah project, what's the model for sustainability as requirements change, scope increases going forward? And a related question, has there been discussion so far, or how far along is Utah and your project going in terms of engaging other states to be true partners?
Maybe I'll start with the second one. As we just announced, the open source community site was just launched last week. And so today, at the Utah Department of Health, we haven't been actively engaged in getting input from others. But I think with the launch of that site, it's definitely encouraged. And this is a two-year project. We're just 8 or 9 months into it. And so now that it's launched, I think over the ensuing 16 months, it would be great to get input from other folks. So hasn't been actively sought yet, but we still have a ways to go. And as far as sustainability, I think it's related to that, again, 8-9 months into this, and we're using the Lean and Agile software development method, which allows us to reprioritize and really address the things that need to be addressed at a given point in time based on the information we have. So at least until the end of the two-year project, that's the aim. And beyond that, I guess we haven't talked a whole lot about that, but yeah. Oh, you will? Or Mike yeah, may have a comment for that.
I can try. In terms of the sustainability, I mean, I'll just give you my perspective. I think it's as sustainable as software can be in that, we're building a community early in the project. We're inviting people in from almost day one. I mean, when you open a community in software, open source is really an art form. You don't want to do it too early, and because it's just chaos, and if you do it too late, then it's done, and there's no reason for anybody to contribute. So we're hoping that by opening it now in the middle of the project, we can draw people in, and they can contribute, and we can make it better software. And in terms of making it sustainable, it will require other jurisdictions to get involved to keep it going. I mean, we have a considerable roadmap, and even since we laid down the original roadmap last November, the deeper you get into it, the more ideas people have. So we're really hoping that, by collaborating with lots of jurisdictions, we can build the premier infectious disease system.
And I'll put in a pitch. You heard from Dr. Leonard this morning. You'll be hearing more about these throughout the conference. With the communities of practice that CDC is opening and inviting participation from the public health partners. We've heard a lot from all of you in the past several years about this need to really build relationships in an open communication in a very different way, to involve users very early in the process. And we at CDC have been developing some relatively monolithic applications over the years and have struggled with how to do the requirements gathering, how to do the user input. And in some areas, we've had tremendous success. In some other areas, which you all could probably rattle off a list, but in other areas, we have not obviously achieved the goals that we had set for ourselves. One of the ways that we're seeking to change that is by inviting the communities to really think differently with us and for us to be thinking differently with you. And so part of what I've seen from several of the presenters today is the power of what happens when a community moves forward and begins to embrace a different way to do business. And that's exactly what Finn is becoming about as we move forward. So I'd invite you all to think tomorrow, Tuesday, as well as for Wednesday, there are several communities meetings that are going to be happening that are not competing with any concurrent scientific session. This is specifically time for all of you to come together and to provide input to each other, whether it's around a notifiable condition application, whether it's around electronic lab reporting, whether it's around messaging structures, vocabulary infrastructure, so forth and so on. Please take that time to do that, because this is something that we believe and we hope, from listening to all of you, we think that you believe as well, contributes to the sustainability of the application services, tools, algorithms, techniques, et cetera, that we are trying to inject into the informatics arena to really support public health to move it forward. So I'll end my pitch, but that's an opportunity. Is it? We'll have to evaluate it over time to see if it actually works. Question. So an excellent question. There are a couple things you'll be hearing about a little bit more for the communities of practice approach, but I think we've heard some very interesting things from the speakers today on how the overlap and awareness of the other products that are being leveraged. So we've heard lots of interesting about Tomcat, about Mirth, about Ruby, that those are in pieces being leveraged and looking at how do we pull those together in a way that makes an application or a service become part of an open source initiative. One of the challenges that actually I didn't hear from the speakers is how the licensing structures begin to struggle, how those get reconciled across the process. But we did hear about three different approaches, and I don't know if the speakers want to comment on how you've been leveraging different approaches, how the open source community that you all have been particularly involved in are able to be aware of each other, learn from each other, and try to prevent redundancy. You've highlighted some reuse, but how you're then seeking to constantly have that reuse. Sean?
Okay. Let me see if I can recall all the questions here. How do we manage perhaps redundancy or recognize? I think easy things are easy to see, and there are clearly some, the easy things to see here are, there are some open source tools that a lot of open source projects are beginning to use. You know, the J2EE stacks are, you're seeing those quite a bit. How do we manage between one another and not reinvent the wheel three times? I don't have a good answer to that question other than to say we need to be communicating, because I have a lot to say about notifiable condition detecting, and I know that these guys do as well, and I'm going to make my pitch to say I know of at least four large-scale efforts building communicable disease processing systems. I think those people need to get together and talk, not necessarily to create one single tool, but to share the ideas and make sure that they learn from one another, and maybe, just maybe, we do collaborate. But again, I think sharing those ideas is crucial within our specific community now, and I think